So, Sézary syndrome, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma is what they call it in a diagnosis now. The incidence is extremely rare. It's in the older age group again. And what it, as I mentioned earlier, it starts out as an erythroderma, which is just a really thick scaling on the skin. I actually remember trying to draw somebody's blood once that had this disease all over her body, and I could hardly get the needle through her skin. It was so thick and so hard. So the duration of the erythroderma is very long, and during this phase it's called mycosis fungoides, okay? And so this can be 1 to 11 years before it actually moves into the organs. So this is what the cell looks like. Now, we talked about it being a cerebriform type nuclear pattern. Christine, do you have that so you can turn it on? It mostly looks like lines or clusters. See this here?
So what kind of stain is that?
Yeah, what kind of stain is that?
That's an electron micrograph.
Oh,
okay. Up there.
So how do we see it on a normal something that we'll actually see?
So on this one, you're going to see those lines and cuts through there, okay? And the one that you might see on the test will look even better than this as far as being able to see those lines and ridges through there.
Okay.
But this is what is actually happening to the nucleus in there, is this cerebriform type nuclear pattern. Okay?
So, Keila, is there anything else on there that's...
Nope, that's it. Nothing else is going to really help you. But it is a T cell, and so you could put a T cell stain on it, and that would be an acid phosphatase where you get that foci of positivity. Remember, we talked about that. Okay, so it's characterized by these chronic skin lesions. They're really red lesions. Now, I have to tell you something about this disease. My brother came home. He's lived in Texas for probably the last 40 years. And he came home and he said, oh, by the way, before he left, he says, I have cancer. And I said, oh, by the way, okay. And he says, yeah, I've got this thing called Sézary's. And I said, you're kidding me. And he said, no. He says, I have a plaque about the size of my hand right here. And I said, is it red? He said, well, it used to be kind of red, but he says, you know, since it was red, I decided to go ahead and put some diaper rash stuff on it. So Desitrim or something like that. Anyway, he arrested that whole thing just by putting that diaper stuff on it. I said, have you published yet? And he said, no, it's pretty embarrassing to tell people what I do, you know. But anyway, he's done really well by using, what is it, Desitin or something like that? That's what he uses, is Desitin. So anyway, he's been pretty successful with his Sézary. So, and it actually took 5 years for him to be diagnosed because he didn't necessarily have the skin lesions and stuff like that. So he went from place to place to finally get diagnosed with that. So
is it... hard to diagnose.
It's hard to diagnose. Really hard to get diagnosed. Because it goes through so many skin phases, and when they actually do a biopsy of the skin, sometimes the cell isn't really evident. So, okay, so in the peripheral blood, the CBC is usually normal, okay? And then with the increase of lymphocytosis as the disease continues to progress, then you ultimately can see greater than 10% Sézary cells, but still, and these are T cells, these are lymphocytic T cells, but you're still not going to see very many. So you almost have to know the history of the patient before you can actually diagnose this disorder. Okay, so the chromatin is very dense. It's really hardly ever fine. And I showed you the pictures there. Folically convoluted nuclear surface. So there are two forms, though. And the large cell and a small cell form. And the large cell form, I think, is the one that you guys may have the opportunity to see. So you should be able to tell that one easily. I showed you the small cell form. What did I say about platelets there?
Normal.
They're normal. Okay. Okay, in the bone marrow, you typically don't find these Sézary cells in the bone marrow, even though you get a few out in the peripheral blood. Again, this is a lymphoid disorder, so sometimes you just get it from the lymphatics, okay? Okay, and the immunologic markers are going to be your T-cell markers, so down in the lower numbers are your T-cells, and the majority of these are helper-inducer T-cells, and only rarely are they the T8 cells, so the cytotoxic suppressors. And this one you can use, the acid phosphatase. You can also use a nonspecific esterase, and that's only for you to know out in the real world. Just kind of remember acid phosphatase for T cells, okay? So we use acid phosphatase with tartrate inhibition for what?
For hairy cell.
Hairy cell, and then we use straight acid phosphatase that show us a foci of positivity, that little hot spot of positivity. And that will help you know that you've got T cells. So can you think of any other T cell disorders we've actually studied? Do you remember in CLL, 95% of them were B cells, right? And only 5% T cells. So we don't have a lot of T cell disorders that we have studied, okay? Okay. Prognostic indicators. After you get them in your organs, then you go pretty fast. But it takes years and years and years for them to evolve and go to the organ. So into like the spleen or lymph nodes or things like that. And what normal people, other than my brother, used was this nitrogen mustard. He did try that. And he hated it. It burned him. He didn't like that. And he didn't like photochemotherapy either. So like when you go to a dermatologist and they use the photo lights on you, and it is kind of a burning sensation. But these are the things that are typically used in when it's in the on the skin, okay?
Have they ever tried the diaper rash?
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't seem to share his information. I don't know. Okay, so irradiation to some degree, and then if it really, by the time it hits the organs, you can go ahead and you can see the vincristine here, the prednisone here. This doxorubicin is actually one that we could use in the acute myeloid leukemias. It's a fairly aggressive one, but methotrexate is what we use in the acute lymphoblastic leukemias, and cyclophosphamide was in the chronic leukemias. So a lot of variation there in the types of drugs. And would you need to know any of those? No, probably not. Okay. All right. Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia. Shauna told me she's going to talk about this next week, so I don't think I'll tell you anything about it. Isn't that what she said, Christine?
Yeah, she said.
In the blood, and it's typically in the bone marrow, what you're going to see is a whole spectrum from lymphocytes to immunoblasts to plasma cells. So it's a whole spectrum that you see in Waldenstrom's, where in multiple myeloma you see mostly just the plasma cells, okay? Let me just get past this. I have this little slow thing going across here, and then there. And there we go again. Anybody have anything you want to talk about while we get through this?
That was awesome candy.
Yeah, is that good candy? Did you like that candy? We have two boxes, so somewhere. That's your Valentine's gift.
I mean, I
do want to talk to you about multiple myeloma. Multiple myeloma is a disease that has a tendency to last many years. In some people, it lasts a very short time in other people. It's a nasty disorder to have. You've got plasma cells, they're producing one type of immunoglobulin, so your other immunoglobulins are not there to help fight infections and do things like that. You have lots and lots of protein, which gums up the kidney, it gums up even your retina. You know, It gums up the platelets so that you can't have normal coagulation. You've got a calcium that's too high because the bone is being broken down. You've got holes in your bones, so your bones are breaking easily. It's just such a broad mechanism of problems. This is not the one I choose to have. Incidence. It's about the same as the acute leukemias. Twice as frequent in blacks as white. Slight increase in male over female as typical. And again, low in the Oriental countries. Genetics. Some families have a higher incidence of multiple myeloma, meaning you could have a grandfather that had it and then one of the kids could have it. Increased incidence in some ethnic groups. I'm not sure which ones those are. Abnormal chromosomes reported, but nothing that's just consistent, like the 1517 or the 821 or something like that. Oftentimes, these people feel bone pain because the bone is being destroyed, okay? Remember I said those plasma cells stimulate osteoclasts. Osteoclasts are the ones that break down the bone. Osteoblasts build up the bone. Infection. Infection's a really tough thing. Infection is going on constantly with these. With the hypogammaglobulinemia and the bone marrow being taken over by plasma cells, you just don't have a good way to take care of that. Too much protein just destroys the renal, and as I mentioned, it coats the platelets, and the platelets are where the actual coagulation mechanism starts and takes place. So, when we talk about phospholipid in the coagulation scheme, it gets the phospholipid from the surface of a platelet, okay? Hyperviscosity, you've got so much protein floating around, you have hyperviscosity, so you go outside, and because of the hyperviscosity, your blood can't flow evenly to the extremities, and so they get really cold and they turn blue. Amyloidosis in some of the cases, I know sure Sean will talk to you a lot about that because it's a chemistry thing.
What is amyloidosis?
Amyloid comes from where? Do you know, Christine? I don't know. We don't know. It's a chemistry thing. We don't cross the boundaries. Shauna does. Demineralization of the bone, I talked about that, and they call it a pathological fracture. I had a friend, and she actually only had it for 3 years before she died, but she had just reached over the edge of the boat that she was in to pick up a stick and broke her arm. And that was how she first knew she had multiple myeloma. So just weird breaks. Neurological problems due to increased calcium. If you recall, if you have a high calcium, well, you guys probably know this better than I do. If you have a high calcium, what happens to you? What was that? You have a tinging in your ears and stuff like that, don't you, or something like that? Okay, anyway, you have some neurological type problems. So in the peripheral blood, all you're going to see in the peripheral blood is Rulo. Okay? If you were handed a slide and all you saw was Rulo, you would worry about multiple myeloma. One of the things we see is that as we have all our slides laid out after it comes out of the staining instrument, is that one with multiple myeloma is much bluer than the rest of the slides because of the protein. Okay? So in the bone marrow, we have greater than 10% plasma cells. You guys that used multiple myeloma to do your differential, you'll notice there was a lot more than 10%, right? Probably about 50, 60, 70%. So we go ahead and we do an electrophoresis on these and separate out the immunoglobulins. And we also have previously determined that we've got an increased protein. So now we want to separate the proteins and see what we have. And we always end up with a monoclonal spike. So instead of being able to see all the proteins that should be there, all we have is just one large spike, okay? And then, of course, the lytic lesions. And there won't be any questions on treatment, so you can just glance at that as Shauna talks about it. It's one of my favorite subjects. So, and here's the Rulo. Now, when is Rulo important? Okay, you've got the trailers here. the fingers that come out here at the end of a slide where your cells are. And then right about here is where you read your red cells, right, where they're just not quite touching. If you go one more field in from this area and you see Rulo, that's significant. Okay, that's when Rulo becomes significant. Okay, now these kind of give you a clue of being plasma cells. See this little area right around here kind of gives you the Hoff feel. So some people refer to them as plasmacytoid lymph, some people. But if you have three cells that look like this, at least for Shauna, think of plasma cell leukemia, okay? Now, some multiple myelomas do terminate in plasma cell leukemia. Usually, the multiple myeloma will not transform into plasma cell leukemia, and typically, you will die just with a multiple myeloma. Okay, it's just so multi-organ oriented that you die of something. But plasma cell leukemia, don't forget to think about plasma cells for one of your leukemias, okay? And then the bone marrow, just kind of a wipeout of plasma cells. And they all vary. Remember, this is a malignancy. Okay, so they're not all going to look like great plasma cells. They're malignant cells, just like some of the other cells you've looked at that didn't look very good. Think of your megakaryocytic leukemia, how varied and terrible that looked. Or your erythrocytic leukemia. So these can look just as variable as all those. Okay. We won't worry about that or that. Okay, and like I said, a lot of times you can live many years, several years, sometimes many years. I've seen several people that have lived 10 and 12 years and done pretty well. But they could terminate in plasma cell leukemia. Oftentimes it's infections or some other organ that has caused the death. Okay, we also have large granulocytic leukemia, and because we're a little behind, I did not see any questions about this on the test. Large granulocytic cells, you know, are natural killer cells. They're lymphocytes. They're a T cell. And these are critical for help modulating the immunocompetence of the body, okay? But there are leukemias that are just natural killer cells leukemia. Some of them are very aggressive, and some of them are not aggressive at all. And this is a large granulocytic lymphocyte, okay? And if you look at your blood, you will see some of your lymphocytes with granules in, and those should be your natural killer cells. And so this is just some information about that. But again, we just need to concentrate on what you guys are going to see, okay? Because I spoke so slowly yesterday. Okay, now we're going to go on to myeloproliferative syndromes. Now, the myeloproliferative are very, very common disorders that you will see a lot of. You may go through your life and never see a natural killer cell leukemia. But you will not go through your life if you stay in clinical laboratory science and not see a myeloproliferative disorder. Now, this is one of the greatest groups of disorders that we have because we learn so much from them. And the things that we learned was in chronic myelogenous leukemia, that was the very, very first leukemia that we knew that there was a specific chromosome associated with it. Actually, it was the very first leukemia that was recognized because it used to be called the splenic leukemia because the spleen got so infiltrated it would just keep growing and growing. And when back in the early days, they actually cut you open and tried to see what happened to you. The spleens were always big. And then they finally invented the microscope so they could look and see what was underneath in those. And they saw the cells and realized that these cells were what was making the spleen so big. And that's when we first started calling it leukemia. So chronic myelogenous leukemia, which is a myeloproliferative disorder, was one of the very first ones that we were able to start understanding what was happening with acute leukemia or chronic leukemia. We have four different disorders that we're going to talk about. Chronic myelogenous leukemia, We're going to talk about polycythemia vera and which one, Christine? Myelofibrosis with myeloid metaplasia. I think in your book they call it chronic idiopathic myelofibrosis or something like that. And then essential thrombocythemia. This has predominantly white cells. This has predominantly red cells. This has predominantly platelets. This problem is in the megakaryocytic group. This, again, is just like, which one did we talk about? Megakaryocytic leukemia. So it's the megakaryocytes that are abnormal. They produce the platelet-derived growth factor that ends up making fibrosis. So the fibrosis is actually a secondary reaction to the abnormal megakaryocytes. So that's what's wrong here. So we're going to talk about each one of those, make sure you can diagnose those. The only one that you will not see on a peripheral smear is polycythemia vera. But does she take care of that in testing you? So what do you think? 10 questions maybe? Lots of questions, okay? So we're going to tell you the area to read in your book is around page 466, and there's actually a chart on page 466 that if you learn that, you can probably just get by with what you need to know, okay? So the chronic myeloproliferative disorders are this group of disorders. They're closely related group acquired malignant disorders. These come from a multipotential stem cell, GEMM. G here, E here, and the M here, and then good old World Health Organization moved chronic myelomonocytic leukemia to a group that's related to these, and therefore got the monocytic component in here too. Okay, but right now we just have the megakaryocytic. They are characterized by an automatic production. Autonomous means just constantly going with no stimulation, okay? So a constant proliferation of one of or more of the cell lines. Okay, I told you those are the ones we're going to study. The World Health Organization put a few more into it, but we don't have any questions on that, so we'll kind of go past that. They did add mastocytosis. You would think that was really kind of a strange thing to add, but each one of these have increased basophils. This is the only time you have basophilia in all the things that we've studied. So increased basophils can be found in all four of these. So when they added mastocytosis, I thought, well, that's still kind of strange, but why did they do that? Well, it's because each one of these are associated with tyrosine kinase and carrying the information from the surface of the cell to the nucleus. And mastocytosis also can do that. So they threw it in there. So the grouping that they took chronic myelomonocytic leukemia and made this for is myelodysplastic / myeloproliferative diseases. There's only three diseases in this, and you will not be asked about any of them. But they moved this because sometimes the white count was low for myelodysplastic and sometimes it was high. So they put it in the myeloproliferative. So they made a category for those. So what are the common features that you see between these four here? The bone marrow is hyperplastic. You can get fibrosis in any one of them, but MMM is the most common one. Typically, anemia will ultimately occur, abnormal platelet function, stem cell disorder, we mentioned the multipotential stem cell, basophilia, and then this JAK2 mutation. This mutation here is one of the best things that's happened to polycythemia vera, because we never could really diagnose polycythemia vera very well, but about 99% of the people with polycythemia vera will have this JAK2 mutation.
At the beginning of this section, you talked about disorder where it was constantly turned on because of a faulty receptor. Is that?
That's it. So The tyrosine kinase is just revved up and going constantly. Okay, the treatment prognosis, let's see, therapy is aimed at reducing the number of white cells for chronic myelogenous leukemia, the number of red cells for polycythemia vera, the number of platelets for essential thrombocythemia, and MMM is just very, very difficult to handle, okay? We'll talk specifically about the drugs. Differential diagnosis might be useful for you out in practice, but you won't be tested on that. So let's talk about chronic myelogenous leukemia. This is just a hallmark leukemia. We've learned so much just because this leukemia exists. It's a clonal disorder. It is from the multipotential stem cell. So all of these cells here can have the marker for this particular leukemia, which is the Philadelphia chromosome. We'll talk about that in a minute. This is 20 to 25% of the adult leukemias, and it's a median age, the middle age group, is who gets this. Philadelphia chromosome. We talked about the Philadelphia chromosome for acute lymphoblastic leukemia, but this is the first time it was described and put to a leukemia, was chronic myelogenous leukemia, and it's the 922 translocation. It makes a fusion gene from the C-Abl proto-onc gene. Remembering what proto-onc genes are, they're normal genes that help function normally in hematopoiesis. And so when that proto-onc gene makes a fusion gene, it has become malignant, okay? So with that 922 translocation, it's bound these two portions together. And it makes this 210 kilodalton fusion gene, and it has enhanced tyrosine kinase activity, which is critical for regulatory mechanisms in hematopoiesis. So this is also revved up and turned on. So it makes way too many white cells. So the cytogenetics, and this is important, you guys. You have to know about the Philadelphia positive chronic myelogenous leukemia. And the majority, anybody that has Philadelphia positive or that they have the gene rearrangement, typically do quite well. But if you have a Philadelphia negative CML, you do poorly. That you will need to know, okay? Okay, the natural history of chronic myelogenous leukemia is that it starts out and it has a chronic phase in which it seems to be stable for a few years. If it turns into the accelerated phase, sometimes that goes so fast you don't even see it. So the maximum that would last is only about 6 months. So you start picking up more blasts, and platelet count starts dropping, and then you can terminate in acute myelogenous leukemia. But you can actually also terminate in acute lymphoblastic leukemia. That you will want to remember, too. Okay, the median survival in the chronic phase is 3 years. You have stable symptoms. Your white count stays about the same. You respond to chemotherapy. Things are going along pretty well. Then you go into the accelerated phase. This is 3 to 6 months. You've heard about night sweats or hypermetabolic state. These people go into an increased metabolic state in which they just is miserable, okay? And then all of these cells that they're producing really start infiltrating the organs, so you have a huge spleen, a huge liver. The environment of the bone marrow gets altered so much that you have your cytopenias from normal cells. Your basophils, they may have started out at 5 or 6%. Does anybody remember what the normal basophil count is in peripheral blood? Around 1%, 0.5 to 1.5, okay. So you usually start out with 3 or 4 or 5% basophils, and when you go into the accelerated phase, it might jump up to 20%. So it's a real prognostic indicator. Things are getting bad fast. Your blast count may have started out at 3 or 4%. Now it's up to, 18, 19%. So you know things are getting worse. And now you no longer respond to therapy, okay. So that's typically how the disease starts going. The bone marrow blast crisis is basically the terminating phase. You end up with greater than 30% blasts and you have acute leukemia. And if you recall, most places you will go will be greater than 20% now. Two-thirds will terminate in one of the acute myelogenous leukemias. So anything from 1 all the way through 7 is possible. And that would be two-thirds. One-third will terminate in acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Okay? So if the GEMM is your multipotential stem cell that's involved, in order to terminate in an ALL, it has to go back one more stem cell. So it picks up the lymphoid. Okay? Yeah, it actually regresses like that because this lymphoblast now actually happens to have the Philadelphia chromosome in it. But prior to that, it didn't, okay? So you can terminate in an extramedullary blast crisis, so your lymph node, bone, skin, soft tissue, breast, CNS, or GI tract. So you can have an accumulation of this kind of sarcoma type with a myeloblast in there. So various places have to be checked to see where this may be occurring. Prognostic indicators, how you respond to therapy. You pick up additional chromosome abnormalities, and you're in trouble. You can also have an additional Philadelphia chromosome. Now, I Googled that because everybody I asked, where does that additional Philadelphia chromosome come from? And one of my pathologists actually just Googled it, and they said that this additional Philadelphia chromosome comes from the original Philadelphia chromosome. And I just don't know enough about genetics to figure that out. So anyway, an additional Philadelphia chromosome is a bad prognostic indicator, okay? That you will need to know. Okay, so how long you're in the chronic phase? If you're only in the chronic phase for 1 or 2 years, you are not in good shape. If you have any of that extramedullary disease where you have it in the lymph nodes or various areas like that, that's not good. If your platelet count starts out as decreased, that is not a good indicator. Or if your percent of blasts are up about 10 or 15%, that is not a good indicator. So the lower the blast count, the more normal the platelet count, and staying in the chronic phase for 3 or 4 or 5 years is much better. Signs and symptoms, typical of how you guys feel. Easy fatigability. You don't like to eat. Abnormal discount. The spleen is too big. Weight loss, excessive sweating. This is because of the hypermetabolic state. So what do we see? In the peripheral blood, we see an elevated white count. This is elevated. We're talking about it can go up to 200,000, but we anticipate between 30 and 100,000 typically. You see the serial shift to the left. So you're going to see myeloblasts, promyelocytes, myelocytes, metamyelocytes, bands, and sets. This is the disease Christine pulled to make you, help you guys learn the granulocytic series. Okay? So you can see each one of these in this particular disorder. Okay? You have a decreased LAP. Oftentimes you see hardly any positivity in an LAP stain. These are important characteristics, okay? The normocytic, normochromic anemia. Increased EOs and vasos. This you will be tested on. You will want to know that, okay? Nucleated red cells may be present. So out of those, know that you have the whole cell line of the granulocytic series. You know about the decreased LAP and know that you have increased EOs and vasos. So this is an LAP stain that's basically a zero. And when you look at a lot of these cells, most of them will be zero in chronic myelogenous leukemia. Okay? Here is a picture, and remember, the white count's very high in their peripheral blood, and you can see your SEGs, your bands, you've got a blast here, myelocyte, maybe metamyelocyte, and here's a basophil. Okay? There's enough information there for you to know that that's a CML. Can you think of anything else that could be?
Is this the one in which the peripheral blood looks like bone marrow smear?
Yes. This is the one where the peripheral and the bone marrow look a lot alike. So, and the bone marrow is hypercellular. This pseudo Gaucher cell, do you know what a Gaucher cell is? Has she talked to you about Gauchers and Niemann Picks and those type of things? Long time ago. Gaucher has a glucocerebrosidase deficiency and therefore can't break down what it engulfs. So these are macrophages, okay? The sea blue histiocytes are basically the same. Niemann Picks has sphingomyelinase that's deficient. So anyway, pseudo-Gaucher cells are macrophages that are trying to clean up all the white cells that are breaking down, and it just gets overloaded. And kind of like a Thanksgiving dinner, you're just really quite miserable and you look awful, and that's what a pseudo-Gaucher cell is, okay? Serial, so you can see those every once in a while in CML. You have the serial shift to the left, the increased ME ratio. When we talk about an increased ME ratio, some of you guys did your bone marrow diffs and you had a lot of white cells. What were your ME ratios? What's normal? ME ratio. 3 to 1. 3 to 1. Okay, so if you had a lot more white cells than red cells, it would be higher. 10 to 1, 50 to 1, okay? Lots higher. That you want to know. Philadelphia chromosome is this combination of the BCR-ABL fusion gene, and this can be picked up by a probe and figured out whether this is there, or the 922 translocation. It's much harder to pick up the whole chromosome than it is to pick up the molecular marker. So they do the chromosome first. If they can't find the 922 translocation, then they'll go ahead and do the molecular markers to determine if it's got that. If it has that, then it's still a 922 translocation. So it's still a Philadelphia chromosome. Okay, this is the bone marrow. See how much it looks just the same. Although you're seeing more myelocytes here, meta, band. You see a blast there? Is there a blast there? Right there on the other side, there's a blast. Okay? Here's your pseudo-Gaucher cell. This is the macrophage that has to clean up all this mess here. It has kind of a onion skin type of cytoplasmic pattern. So that's the typical Gaucher look, is that onion skin type of appearance.
That's not a regular stain.
Yes, it is. That's the disadvantage. Depending on where you work is what kind of stain you're going to get. But if it's humid outside, the stain's going to change. If it's dry inside, the stain's going to change. So I always look around to see what my stain is doing before I start deciding what the cells are. Okay, so this is a normal stain. So you have the increased uric acid because of the breakdown of all the white cells. You have an increase. You know what transcholdobalamin 1 and transcholdobalamin 3 are? What cells are they made by and carried by? Granulocytes. So these B12 binding proteins are increased. So the B12 is increased anytime you have a really high count that's granulocytic. Okay? So these are high. And an increased, you don't need to worry about that. So how do we get all these cells that we want to destroy out of the system without destroying the kidneys and the other areas? We use allopurinol and a lot of hydration because we got a lot of hyperuricemia and uricosemia. And this is from the white cells that we're breaking down, okay? So we're trying to get all this through the kidneys without destroying the kidneys. Then the busulfan normalizes the hematopoiesis. Hydroxyurea, interferon. This is the big man. Anybody that had their money on this, when Gleevec hit the market, this is the drug that interferes with the tyrosine kinase. And so you can imagine how helpful it was in chronic myelogenous leukemia. That is a critical drug today. If we can't get this drug to work, basically we go with a bone marrow transplant or a stem cell transplant. And it, when it goes into the acute phase, we use the acute drugs, the daunorubicin, the cytisine arabinoside, and 6-thioquinine. Okay, so we started using busulfan many, many years ago. Had a lot of side effects. Started using hydroxyurea because it had less side effects. Interferon, we could actually get the Philadelphia chromosome to go away even though you didn't live a whole bunch longer. And then this came along and improved things dramatically. Okay? Risk groups. Okay, any questions on chronic myelogenous leukemia? Philadelphia chromosome, LAP. What's the LAP score?
Zero.
Decreased. And the Philadelphia chromosome is characteristic for the myeloproliferative chronic myelogenous leukemia. So you're not going to see it in polycythemia vera. You're not going to see the Philadelphia chromosome in myelofibrosis. And you're not going to see the Philadelphia chromosome in essential thrombocythemia. You're going to see a decreased LAP here, an increased LAP here, a normal to increase here, and a normal here. So the LAP and the Philadelphia chromosome are the hallmark things you're going to watch for. Don't forget that you have an elevated EO count and elevated basal count. That's also helpful. Okay, myelofibrosis. I'm sure you all know what myelofibrosis is by now. If not, you haven't talked to Christine. It's a myeloproliferative. Well, I told you how it occurred from the platelet-derived growth factor. As I mentioned, the fibrosis is secondary. You still have organomegaly, weakness, fatigue, night sweats, fever, so all those look about the same. The peripheral blood, this is important. Like I said, the LAP score is normal to high, and both of those will appear on your test, okay? Anemia and the teardrop-shaped cells, the cryocytes, or teardrop-shaped cells, they're equivalent, are critical for the myelofibrosis. Leukocytosis, it's usually only up around 25,000. You can have a fairly good shift to the left with this particular disorder. You can have the JAK2 in about 50% of this. Abnormal platelet forms, these platelets do not function well in myelofibrosis. So here's your dacryocyte that you're looking for, another one down in the corner. Usually a dry tap in the bone marrow because of the fibrosis. So we use, this is a trichrome stain here that tests for the collagen. You can use a reticulum stain, which is black, that tests for the reticulum. But you have to have that. And you see huge portions of the bone marrow are just fibrotic, okay? You don't see much in the way of cells here. These little black things are the cells. So myelofibrosis, the bone marrow is in a lot of trouble. So the management is mostly support. You try chemotherapy. Nothing really works very well for this particular disorder. Okay, polycythemia vera. Poly, if you read your book, and Christine noticed this now, when we say polycythemia, we're not saying red cell, we're saying several. So actually, this is a panmyelosis, where your white count's a little high, your platelet count can be high, and your red count is high. What we run into the most problems with this one is the elevated red count. You have a high red cell mass. Now, we also have a couple other things we have to worry about with polycythemia. Polycythemia vera is the malignant disorder. It's the one that will produce the autonomous proliferation of the erythroid cell line, and it's the one that will, it's the same age group there. So what we've done is we check the increased red cell mass, make sure that the arterial blood gases are normal because it can't be because you're hypoxic and you have a huge spleen. Now, something I didn't mention is each one of these disorders have a big spleen. So myelofibrosis, all the disorders have a large spleen. Okay, so if you have just the large spleen, then you can have, you have to have two of category A. to a category A and then two of this. But not in this day and age. This is how it used to be done. In this day and age, run the Jack 2. See if you got the Jack 2, okay? So these are ways that we used to have to mess around and do this. Most important thing for you to remember with polycythemia vera is you have this increased LAP, and depending on how high your granulocytic count is whether you have an elevated B12. You have leukocytosis in several of them. You can have thrombocytosis in several of them. So this is the important one here. Plus, you don't have a Philadelphia chromosome. This is not one that you're going to be able to pick up on a peripheral smear, nor is it one you're going to pick up in the bone marrow. So we really encourage you to read that section on polycythemia, and especially that chart on 466, so you know what disorders come up. So this is primary. This is primary polycythemia, is polycythemia vera. This is the malignant one. Then you have secondary polycythemia. What causes secondary is it means that you have to have something happen to your oxygen in your body. And whether it's due, and it lists several things that can create that, even going up to high altitudes, okay? So make sure you look at seeing what can create a hypoxia. And then there's a relative one where the red cell mass is normal, but the plasma volume has dropped, so it makes it look like you have an elevated red cell mass. That's 466, right around in there. Okay, so make sure you read that whole polycythemia section because there's so many questions because we can't check you morphologically on this.
Is that the Atlas book?
No, it's the Sherlin's book.
Yeah, it is exactly.
Okay, the things that we always have trouble with, whether it be an essential thrombocythemia, polycythemia, is this thrombosis and hemorrhage. Either one can happen, and because we can't tell which is going to happen, we can't treat it. We can't give heparin to keep you from thrombosing, and we can't give you blood to keep you from hemorrhaging. We don't know which thing you're going to do. This pruritus is due to the increased base fills. Okay. So you're not going to see anything that's particularly helpful. The thing that we use and try to always use is phlebotomy. Just take off the red cells. Do a phlebotomy and see if we can take care of things that way. Then quickly through ET, this is the one that if you don't have any of the others, then maybe you have this one. And all you really need to remember about essential thrombocythemia is you have an incredibly elevated platelet count. The platelets look pretty normal, maybe a little bit large. So as you look at your ETs upstairs, lots of megakaryocytes in the bone marrow, greater than a million platelet count in the peripheral blood. What we have to do to diagnose this is make sure it's not a reactive process, and 50% are JAK2 positive. So myelofibrosis has 50%, ET has 50%, polycythemia vera has 99% of the JAK2. JAK2 is not important in chronic myelogenous leukemia. And again, the LAP score can be normal or slightly elevated it's usually normal in ET, okay? So the LAP score is useless in ET. Okay? That's pretty much what you need to know. Cause of death is usually hemorrhage or thrombosis. Again, just kind of remember that. And just make sure that you can separate those out. Without the PV, you have to know just some book stuff for PV. This is the whole granulocytic series, MMN. Christine will convert you to MMM upstairs. ET, lots of platelets.